President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, as you heard in the announcement, and today is the 19th of June. If you're on the West Coast, it's already the 20th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone, they just turned the 20th, and the Mountain Time Zone's an hour behind. Wow. What a strange world we live in. Lots of interesting things going on in the political realm, although we're not going to talk about politics tonight other than to say that there's already a controversy now. Barack Obama has announced that he's not going to accept donations from the public for his political campaign for the office of the presidency. That's an interesting little tidbit of information. Tonight, Lou Dobbs said that that's the first time since Watergate that anyone has done that. Of course, they're talking about the last time somebody got caught, I think. Anyway, it's raised a lot of issues with people, especially since Barack Obama went back on his word to the American people going back to April 3rd of 2007. He did tell everyone several times while he began speaking to town hall meetings and what have you, that he was going to look for the support of the people. But evidently now the big corporations are more important, and the big money, the lobby money. We'll leave that there. Michael Reagan, the son of former President Ronald Reagan, has left the country after having issued, let's say, a solicitation or numerous solicitations for people to commit murder upon 9/11 truth seekers. And he said he would pay for the bullets. I still have yet to hear an apology from him or anyone affiliated with him. I presume he left because it is a felony to solicit murder, especially over the radio. And with that, we're going to move on to much more enlightening things on Evident Footprints tonight, bringing back one of my favorite guests. I like this person because she is into metaphysics like I am. She has studied world history going back eons. I like that, too. We talk about history a lot on this show. And she is very in tune to things in the spiritual realm and has a very, let's say, lucid and clear perspective of religions. And she is an author. She has written a book called The Call, Awakening the Angelic Human. You can visit her website at www.sacredspaceswa.com. or www.angelichuman.com. And with that, I'd like to bring on tonight's guest on Evident Footprints, Toni Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich. Toni, good evening.
Good evening, Don. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. That was very sweet.
Well, I was practicing all day.
Did you practice in front of a mirror, too?
No.
To make sure there was a smile in your voice. Before we start talking about various other subjects, curiosity over here on the phone wants to ask you a question. I knew about the Barack Obama piece in the news. I didn't know about the Reagan piece. Are you saying that he wants to kill people who are looking for other reasons that 9/11 happened besides what we were told? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, to paraphrase Mr. Reagan's statements, and of course this is Michael Reagan,
yes.
He said something to the effect that it would be okay for people to shoot 9/11 truth seekers, basically anyone trying to get to the bottom of the truth about 9/11.
Okay. Okay.
And that he would pay for the bullets personally.
I see.
That is a solicitation to commit murder. Now, he particularly singled out Mark Dice by name. Also.
Oh, and he's gone bye-bye now. He's left. He's hiding out someplace, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he's probably with the Rothschild bloodline
someplace
in southern France or Israel.
Something.
Who knows?
Okay, I just wanted to clear that up because that was news to me and I wanted to make sure I understood what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you were talking... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say it's a sad state we're in, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of like that dark before the light kind of feeling. I mean, that's what I'm getting out of it. And it's one of the things that I've been thinking about recently. In fact, I've been doing a weekly YouTube on various subjects and posting them and sending out a newsletter, make sure people see it. But tomorrow I'm going to do one on languaging and how the language that we use very often can betray us. And what brought this up for me was a conversation I had with a person recently this week, and she was talking to me about the fact that she has a hard time talking to her family, her blood family, her relatives, about her spiritual life. And she is into metaphysics, as you and I are, and that's what her spiritual belief system revolves around. And she gets very excited whenever she discovers something new. And she tries to share this with them, and it doesn't work. So I asked her to give me a for instance. And so she started talking about my video that I did when the light orbs talked through me about our capacity to love, and she was telling them about that. So I stopped her and I said, okay, so you're really shooting yourself in the foot. You're talking to people who, first of all, do not believe in metaphysics, and then you're telling them that you want to tell them about this woman who speaks for these fluorescent light orbs that float around who want to talk about love. I said, you're not even using words they can understand. You need to create a whole new language so that you can go to where they are and they can understand where you're coming from. And please don't start with light orbs. Start with something simpler than that. And when I was thinking about this, when I got off the phone with her and I started thinking about doing the video, I realized that all of the words that we use in the metaphysical, whatever you want to call it, metaphysical, new age, light worker realm, that whole world, they're all catchphrases that mean something to us. And they don't mean anything to anybody else except the people in the same like mindset, the same group of humans. And in that, we talk a lot about things like the earth changes and the things that are happening right now on the planet. And I don't believe that the people who are talking about it, and I'm talking about the whole light worker set, really realize that what we're talking about is something that is absolutely physical. Yes, it is about light bodies, and it is about our spirituality, and it is about raising our consciousness and all of these things. And at the same time, it is an actual physical experience that we're having on this planet in physical bodies. And because of that, people are going to experience discomfort. And because that tends not to be looked at or tends to be pushed to the side as though, well, you're just attracting it to yourself kind of attitude, nobody really gets a grip on what they can actually do to shift what they're experiencing along with doing it, shifting it for everybody else. And I think that it's a really important piece to look at because it's so easy to go into the woo-woo world and pretend that the things that are happening on the planet are just, if it's happening to somebody else, and I'll send them light and energy. And yet they're happening everywhere right now, from the floods back in the Midwest to what happened in China and Burma and starvation in Africa. We could go on and on and on and on and on and on. It's all happening to everybody. And if you really understand that it's happening on a physical level, what do you want to do physically to assist just in your own community? You don't have to, you know, take off and fly to someplace with the Red Cross to assist if you don't want to, but you can. And I've really been musing about that recently, about how literally detrimental this whole idea has become. And I get so many emails every day about how I'm supposed to amp up the grid and hold the planetary ascension. And I just wanted to say to these people, would you just go look in a mirror and address yourself?
Yes. Now, while you're talking, if I can comment, there's a couple of things coming to mind. And you mentioned, like, you know, the starving people in Africa. Well, why is it that there are just starving people in Africa? We have
starving people
here.
There's starving people here. There's starving people on this island.
Oh, yeah. We have people starving a mile or two away from where I live as well.
Yes.
I mean, and pretty much anyone listening to this show can say the same thing.
Yes.
What we fail to recognize, first of all, we put these terms on everything. You know, you use the word metaphysics, and that's probably the appropriate word.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have these catchphrases, New Age, and right away all the Christian people band together as if this is now some secret, dark, occult thing.
Yeah.
And this is, again, putting something into a box. Everything gets put into a box, and I just wait for the wrapping paper, the bow, the little card, and stick it underneath the Christmas tree. everything, and I'm being a bit facetious, but you understand what I'm saying. People are still waiting for everyone else to do the job for them. Why are Americans, or really people all over the world, why are they so lazy? Why are they so apathetic? Why are they so noncommittal? Why are they without conviction? Why are they so brainwashed and so in denial about being brainwashed? That's pretty amazing when you can brainwash somebody and have them deny that they're brainwashed.
Mm-hmm. They don't know. That's just it. They don't know. They think that what they're thinking are their own thoughts.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's what brainwashing is.
Ultimately, when the people in Africa are starving, that is us starving. We are starving.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The people down the street from where you live, on Lopez, are starving. You are starving with them.
Exactly.
And so am I, even though I'm not there with you.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That is the message that they don't get, and I'm pretty certain that's what you're saying in a sense too.
Well, I am, and what I'm really wanting the listeners to kind of look at themselves. I mean, we can all do that. I'm not pointing a finger. And see when we step aside from, physically step aside from the message that we say that we are sending. Those of us who work in any kind of spiritual realm, which is what I basically do every day, and a lot of the people I know do. It's almost brainwashing that you're in this place, and therefore, this is the only place you have to pay attention to. Whereas there's all these other people who are us too, just like you were saying, who don't even understand what you're talking about, and so few people who are in this particular genre of practice will take the time to find out what that other person actually needs from you in verbiage. What language do they speak? What resonates with them so that when you start talking about anything like you and I are talking about, they will understand because you're using their language.
Mm-hmm.
And
Go ahead.
No, I just, I keep getting struck by it. It's kind of like, you know, if you're going to buy a red car, all you see are red cars. Well, I've been thinking about this a lot. It's really been in my heart and on my mind. And so everything that comes up to me, I start using this as a focus point. I was at the post office 2 days ago, and there's some stamps out right now that are hearts, and they're real filigree. And I heard somebody call them the wedding stamps. Well, I don't know if that's what they're called or not, but in my mind, that's what they were called. So I went to the post office, and I said I wanted to buy some stamps. And I said, are these the ones you have to offer? They have this little, you know, display. And the guy goes, yeah. And I said, okay, I want the wedding ones. And he goes, what? And I said, well, that's what I heard them called. And I put my finger on them, and he goes, so you want the hearts? Well, there's two different heart stamps. There's those, and then there's another heart stamp that's a big red heart. And I said, well, I want the real fluffy ones, these, the pretty ones. And he goes, all right, fine. And I thought, gosh, what's this about? So I said, wait a minute. I said, let's just stop for a minute, okay? What does this stamp say to you? What do you call this? And he goes, well, it's a heart, I guess. I said, you guess? What else could it be? I'm just curious. What else could you possibly see on this piece of paper? He said, I'll tell you what I see. I see a piece of wire that was welded together and then painted just like we did in high school in welding shop. I said, oh, it's welded metal to you. And he goes, yes, it's welded metal twisted into the shape of a heart. And I said, oh, great. Well, I'll take 5 sheets of the welded ones. And he goes, oh, great. And he totally changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it took, was to find out what's going on in this moment when I'm just saying what I'm saying and this guy doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what I'm talking about because his mind can't think the same way my mind is thinking. Well, if you use that as an analogy, every time we are trying to talk about all of the things that need to be accomplished in the planet and accomplished in the nation and all of these things that we're doing, we use verbiage that is our way of saying, I'm spiritually, metaphysically inclined, and this is the way I talk. And people don't usually get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they have this also, they're preconditioned to think that that word leads down a path that they're not going to be comfortable with or that's strange to them or could have a boogeyman lurking in the background or could bring some negative experience upon them that they can't extricate themselves from. And so, you know, you have all these mixed emotions going on. And they're really not hearing, and they're really not seeing anything.
No, it's usually because of the religion they belong to. That's what I find. Is it's usually because they have a specific religious belief that says, this is the way the world works. And it does work for them up to a point. I mean, it's brainwashing again, but this is what I've been told, and this is the way things are. Whatever belief system they happen to belong to. And then if you say something, because all of these quote-unquote New Age phrases are outside the purview of a church. So if you use one of them, you've automatically set yourself up as in opposition to what they're believing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead,
you know, it's interesting that you brought this topic up, Tony. I had this conversation with someone yesterday and again this morning with another person. Along these lines, we were talking about starvation around the planet. And I was saying, I asked the rhetorical question, what are you doing to help resolve the problem?
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, well, there isn't anything I can do. I myself am without a job. I don't have any money. I couldn't give them any money. If I did have some money, I would spend it on myself. I would go out and buy some food for me. And I said, okay, that's fair. I'm not going to say that ends the whole issue right there, but have you considered praying for that person? And mm-hmm. It came out, well, I don't know how to pray for someone I don't know. And I said, well, then reverse the situation. If you wanted someone to pray for you to bring you out of the situation you're in, what would you want to hear? What would you want them to ask for on your behalf? And it completely changed their whole way of thinking.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's absolutely right, because that is the way to pray. as though the person you're praying for is you.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that came out in Greg Braden's book, The Isaiah Effect, which is, you know, it's all about the Isaiah scroll from the Dead Sea Scrolls. But basically what it is about feeling. And if you can't feel the prayer, the feeling is the prayer. And if you're just saying words, then they're just words.
Yes.
But it's the feeling that creates the prayer, that creates the energy, that creates the action. And that's what you're doing when you're telling that person that, because then that person can feel what it would feel like for someone to pray for them for something that they desired.
Yes.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful.
Now tonight, all the people who are starving in Africa are eating because this person said a prayer.
Yes.
I'm not making a joke. I'm saying...
No, I understand that. No, I completely agree with you.
The prayer has to be that filled with conviction that mm-hmm. that will automatically happen. And that becomes a miracle.
Yes. That's what everybody thinks is a miracle, except that we're all creators. So we create everything. And there are no miracles, really. And that's going to come out in my book about Sarah, which is one of the things we were going to talk about tonight.
Yes, let's talk about Sarah.
Sarah is the daughter of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. And I say that with utmost conviction because many years ago, I'm 61, and somewhere around 21-ish, I had the beginning of a series of visions that were totally unbidden. I didn't sit in meditation. I didn't read books. I didn't watch movies. I didn't ask for them to come. I wasn't concentrating on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of a sudden, I'd be doing something, and I was in a different place. And every time that I was in that different place, I was with Jesus. And this isn't the fluffy Jesus of the Sacred Heart in the Catholic Church with the halo. This is a man who I know who he is. He's my father. And he is talking to me. And he is telling me things. And one of the first things that I asked was, what am I supposed to do with this? And he said, nothing until you know the time. You will know when the time is right. So I live my life, and this happens to me. It happened to me driving a car in a snowstorm once, which was like, I certainly hope someone's driving the car. And time went by and time went by and time went by, and I kept writing everything down and accumulating all of it and just keeping track of everything so that I didn't forget anything or lose it. And I thought, you know, someday it's going to be a book. It's going to be, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm supposed to do something, I guess. And about 3 weeks ago, I was just reading an email from somebody, and it had nothing to do with this at all, and I just felt it come into me. It was just like a hush, almost, and it was just, Sarah, now's the time. And I just sat there, and I went, oh, my gosh, it's time. I know. He said I'd know, and I know. So I just put together a video. I started a new web page, and made the announcement that I remember being Sarah, the daughter of Jesus. Now, once I sent that out, several people have asked me, who are close to me, well, you know, how's it going? You know, what's the reception like? And it's been amazing. I'd say 90% of the responses I got were not only supportive, but they were like, oh, my gosh, you finally said it. I'm so glad. Don't stop now. I'm praying for you on this beautiful journey. I mean, they were just beautiful. Some people were telling me things that they remembered from the same time period. I'd say 10% of the people basically said, I don't want to hear about this from you, kind of thing. And they didn't want to say why. They just didn't want to go there. So, okay, that's fine. But I think those are pretty good odds. And I'm very, very happy and very excited because it's been a long time. Putting the name with my name, I just added it to my name so it would be there. But I haven't really used it or talked about it or told anybody or much of anything. If somebody said, what's Sarah? I say, it's a spiritual name that's part of my name, and I just leave it alone. And now I really get to do this, and it feels kind of like being a little girl who finally gets to talk about all of the wonderful things in her life that no one's heard about.
Mm-hmm. When you told me that, and I think that was a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. actually, and I was very tight-lipped about it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I didn't even respond to your newsletter announcement.
Right, right.
I was leaving that moment for tonight. So,
okay.
So it's interesting that you made that decision at the time that I've been reading the Secret Scripture, which is Barnabas' transcription of the Testament of Jesus.
Right. Right.
And it's mind-blowing, the things that are in there. I'm saying to myself, why did they keep this out of the Bible? Well, it's quite obvious why it's been kept out of the Bible.
Right. Well, it was Constantine, actually, that did that back in 325 A.D. You know, if we look at history, and I have done this partially because of what happened to me, I've done a lot of research, but also because it's always been my bent. I mean, when I was 13, I was reading James Churchward and his stories on Moo. I mean, this has always been my focus of finding out what's behind everything we're told. Well, you know, where does all this come from? You know, is it actually true? And when you really look at how the Catholic Church, which is supposed to be like, that's the foundational church, and then the Protestants broke off and blah, 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 as far as Christianity is concerned, how it was actually formed, it really has nothing to do with the people who surrounded this man called Jesus during the time that he was on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And everything to do with politics, war, and rulers. And when Constantine decided that the one way for him to be the ruler he wanted to be was to blend one church with his kingdom, he decided that he would hold this council at Nicaea and that he would call the bishops in and have them sign off on what he was going to decide would be the Bible. Would be the books that were going to be included in the New Testament. And the thing that's really interesting, and it's hardly known by anybody, but if they go into the right history books, the right research books, they'll find it. What he did, I thought this was very interesting, it sounds like something that might happen now. What he did was to have all of these bishops and archbishops come to his big fancy castle to see these documents that he was going to purport to be the New Testament. And he had them walk between his armed soldiers. And when everybody got inside, he said, you know, you're very safe here. I have my armed soldiers outside, blah, 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 blah. So everybody was just sitting there, you know, dumb ducks, listening to him. And then he begins to say, these are the books that are going to be included. This is going out. This is for getting rid of this. Everything having to do with women, reincarnation, any of these things, the book that you're reading, any of the stuff is not included. Here's what's going to be included, blah, 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 period. And this is what we're going to say. And we're going to say that Jesus Christ was the only Son of God. And we're going to create the Nicene Creed. And we're going to, this is what we are going to do. And you're all going to sign off on it. And if anybody does not want to sign off on this, they can leave right now and they can walk back out through my armed soldiers. Well, the thing that's going to happen is they were going to get killed. So, of course, everybody signed off. And that is actually how it all got started.
Now, this didn't take place in Washington, D.C.
No, but it could have, couldn't it?
that's
why I said it felt like something that would happen now.
Yes.
You know, it's been going on for a long, long time.
Yes, yes. Not to jump the gun here, I know you're writing then. Is there anything you want to share about what has come to your consciousness as a result of?
The thing that I find the most beautiful for me is the utter simplicity in the truth that not only Jesus taught, but the group of people that he was actually with, which who were the Essenes, and yes, they had all these rules and they were very strict, et cetera, et cetera, but they were actually the ones who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. And within that is what we were talking about, how to really pray, how to really, quote unquote, heal someone. All of the things that we call metaphysics were present then. Mm-hmm. And the people who formed the Essenes were actually the Therapeutae out of Egypt, who were the healers, the magicians, as they were being called, who could perform miracles. But none of this is a miracle. It's all natural. And so it's all really simple. If you take away the foo-foo of the Bible and you take away all of the church rigmarole and all of these things that are like, they're just layers upon layers upon layers of pomp and circumstance and ceremony and ritual that have been taken from very, very simple rituals and created into these great, phenomenal Cecil B. DeMille productions. And you just come back to the simplicity of it all. That's where it really lives. And for me, that's the most important, because that talks to everybody. And that's what's going to be in the book, is those memories and how Seurat ended up, actually you mentioned southern France, in southern France, living with the Gitans, the gypsies, in hiding, and what happened while she was there, which inevitably now the gypsies in southern France see her as a saint, and they have a statue to her in this church, and blah, 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 except they just call her Saint Sarah. They don't talk outwardly about who she was, though they know, because it was always one of their biggest secrets. And I've been there, and I've been with them, and it's amazing. It's a beautiful experience to see in physical form things that I saw in my mind's eye and lived through in an etheric way before I ever knew they existed.
Now, did you tell these people in southern France who you are?
No.
Or who you were? Okay.
No, I didn't. I almost did, and I got a no. In fact, my mouth was opening, and I just got no inside. And so, and not out of fear, I just got no. And so I just respected that and left it alone and went about my business. But it was wonderful. So I'm excited, and we'll just see where it goes from here. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just really, really happy. There's a peace that comes with this that I always suspected would be there, and yet never really knew for sure until it happened, and it's there. It's just a kind of like a collective sigh of, okay. And I'm really jazzed about it.
Well, I know the feeling, because there are a lot of issues, personal issues as well as issues that are really, they're all personal though, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
In line of what we're talking about.
that's true.
But those things outside of us that we think are separate from us, you know, the day-to-day things, the things that I cover in my research, and it's like, okay, wait till they hear this. They're not going to believe this. You know, you go through that when you're discovering these things, and it's because the truth sometimes can be so shocking.
Right.
And so, I never really had apprehension about doing it. I suppose those that have had a premature ending in their endeavors to uncover certain things, mm-hmm. probably were not approaching it the way some of us do, and you know, from a higher place, number one, and that's not putting ourselves up on a pedestal. I mean, looking at the big picture, the totality. It's the truth. And it has to come out at any cost. And so that conviction sort of is the shield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it's also what drives you. The conviction drives you, because it's the energy behind what you find and what you know. You sense it. And I know you've talked, and we've talked about how your research, a lot of it is research through the internet or documents or books, but a lot of it is intuitive hits or knowings that you have, and then you just follow that.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you to your next piece of research. I mean, it's actually allowing yourself to tap into the cosmic consciousness, the cosmic whole, you know, that collective mind that Jung talked about. It's tapping into that information and then being able to follow it in the physical world to see where it takes you.
And it's, what's interesting is those that are being exposed either pretend like it's not happening, mm-hmm. or it has to be driving them up a wall, you know.
Or they're trying to find another way, the next way to compensate or cover it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's too late. It's all uncovered.
Yeah, and it is. And I know that you've been publishing your findings in the Idaho Observer, so, and then they go on the Internet the next month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Or, well, actually, I put it up on my site, you know, immediately when it,
okay.
or right about the same time, and they get it up by the next week. It's usually
okay.
not a month. But,
Okay. Great. Okay. Yeah.
But the point I'm making here is that, I think the whole, first of all, how I research, it comes to me, but I'm doing the paperwork, you know, the actual research for
right.
those that have to see that.
Yes.
I don't need to see it. I know it. If,
right.
if you understand my meaning.
I do understand what you mean. Absolutely.
So it's kind of the same thing that you're going through. I can relate to how you're feeling because I'm putting myself out there, you know, because what do? Their method is to attack the messenger.
Yeah, that's true, right, yeah, because if they start looking at the message, then they can't attack that.
Yes.
So all they can do is attack the messenger, but attack away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to lose here. It's a glorious time. I think that, and we kind of started the conversation with, you know, what's going on now, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's that we are in the glory, no matter what it looks like or feels like, of everything that everybody's been waiting for. I mean, we're right in the midst of the chaos that creates the most beautiful order, when we get through with all of the chaos, but we have to go through this first, and I guess that's where I was actually headed when I got off on my languaging little soapbox there, is that in the awareness that we have that all of this is going on comes the knowledge that we have to go through all of this shuffling out for the new awareness and consciousness to be. It's not like, you know, everybody's talking in the New Age world, people talk about, well, we're going into the fifth dimension and we're going to ascend and we're going to all go into our light bodies, as though nothing's going to happen before that. We're simply going to sit there and smile sweetly at everybody and say, oh yes, I'm a light worker, and all of a sudden we're going to be what, transparent or what? I don't understand what they think is going to happen. There has to be this enormous reshuffling of all of the energy for everyone to be able to get on board.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody is in such a different place. So this has to happen. And in that, what happens is just what you just said. The truth will out. It always does. It has to. Because you can only keep things covered so long. It's like a pressure cooker.
Yes, I was reading what Jesus said. This, again, was in the book that Barnabas transcribed. And
right.
Jesus said he was describing 15 days mm-hmm. of what we would call the end times, or there's definitely a transition going on.
Uh-huh.
And he described horrible things
uh-huh.
taking place all over the planet. And at one point, he said, all things that have been created in the universe will begin speaking.
Yes.
Now, imagine what that will sound like.
Will it
be like thunder, or will it be like the sound of an atomic explosion, or will it be music? Will it be singing? But that rocks and grass mm-hmm. and trees and fish and everything will be talking. It will be making noise,
mm-hmm.
and it will be saying something.
Yeah.
What imagine what that message might be? and that he had, he was given that, that vision from God, or he was, he knew that, however that came about, whether God told him that, or whether he, it was just an awareness that came to him, or if it came as a vision at the moment he spoke the words, just to contemplate that, because for years I've been telling people, you know, because you see a rock sitting there, on the ground doesn't mean that it's not alive, that it doesn't have life in it. It was created. And it's serving a purpose, and it knows it's a rock because it's able to remain a rock. Mm-hmm. It's not devoid of consciousness just because you don't understand how it was made and why it's there. And when we look at ourselves in comparison to how nature can take care of herself, how the mm-hmm. earth, knows how to keep it all together. We are not as smart as we think we are, and we are not as advanced or conscious as we really think we are. And
when you look at nature.
Yes. So there are a lot of issues that we're going to go through. The chaos, I think, is going to be maybe one of the lesser things.
mm-hmm.
The awareness that we're, should we make it that far? The awareness that we will come to will be so profound that you'll probably have a lot of people go insane.
Oh, I would think. Well, a lot of people think that they're insane right now. I mean, just because they begin being able to see.
Mm-hmm.
I have people coming to me often who think that they're crazy. In fact, a lady emailed me the other day, and she was just going on and on and on, and I don't know her. I don't know who she is. I guess she found my website, and was going on about all these things that she can see and she can hear and what's happening and da 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 da. And what is she going to do? So I told her what to do and how to come to terms with those apparitions that she's having and what to say and blah blah blah. And I said, just give it a try. It works, and it did work for her. But it's really about getting yourself under control. So that
mm-hmm.
when you're seeing things that you realize you're the only one seeing them, that then you make the choice to interact with them so that you can be the one in control of the situation instead of feeling like something's happening to you. And I'm sure that there's a lot of psychiatrists out there that would think that that's like crazy, and yet it works, and I've used it many times with many people, and it always works. But it puts you in the control seat so that you're now realizing that whatever you're experiencing, you're really experiencing it. Doesn't mean anybody else is, nor does anybody else have to. You're the only one that's important in this particular show. So you take control of the situation and speak whatever you need to get whatever happening is happening around you in your control.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'm sure that a lot of people will want to feel that way in the times that you're talking about, because when people's sight opens up and their hearing opens up and they're able to really see and feel, like you said, the rocks will speak, it's going to take them to a place that they've never been before, and that's exactly what's needed. It's like telling somebody who's having a lot of problems to go on vacation so that they're outside of their natural environment, they're outside of the usual place where all their problems are, so that they can look at it from a different perspective. That's what happens when we begin to step into a different paradigm, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's
up.
A question I'd like to ask you, Tony, and this is for the listening audience, and I'm going to try mm-hmm. to ask it in a way that I'm using the words that they understand.
Okay.
And it's not going to be too deep in that respect, language-wise.
Okay.
Those of us who are paying attention to all these different things going on multi-dimensional scales, you know, these energies that are coming into the solar system and coming upon the Earth and the Sun and all the planets in our immediate solar system, and throughout the galaxy, and probably throughout the universe, and have always been there. We sense that with all this chaos and this turmoil and this heightened state of fear, which the Illuminati, as they like to call themselves, like to to promote, to keep us in this catatonic state of paralysis, we'll say. Mm-hmm. We sense somehow that there's something that's going to happen. Now, I could go into what I see happening. However, I end up affecting what is going to happen by putting it out that way, because there are people that will take it and they will turn it into fear, or there are people that will try to make it their own thing, if you know what I mean. Every thought affects all the other thoughts.
Right.
Every action affects all the other actions. Mm-hmm. But we're perceiving something, and I know this to be the case with those of us who speak to each other from day to day or write to each other, and we're discussing things that are going on and how we're dealing with it, or mm-hmm. what we plan on doing in the immediate future, or the short range future, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. or the long range future. And there are a lot of things that are going to be totally out of our control. We're going to see these things happening, and it's going to be a question of, are we going to react to these things, or are we going to discern what's going on and then make our decisions based upon really seeing and discerning what's going on, rather than to react out of fear or to submit to something, if you get my meaning.
Mm-hmm. I get your meaning.
Now, a lot of people say there's something good coming down the pike. I don't know exactly what it is. I can feel that this monster that's trying to take over the world somehow is going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And then the concern that each one has is that I just hope that I carry out my promise, you know, my mission in life, mm-hmm. before that opportunity is taken away from me. Mm-hmm. Do you want to comment on that, and how people who are feeling or seeing something, they might not understand what it is, how they can cope with this changing reality, because it's really changing every second.
Right. There's only one place that I go, and there's only one place that I teach as a bottom line. I mean, I teach a lot of things, but when we get to the bottom line, there's only one thing that I use as my foundation, and that is compassionate absolution. And by that I mean realizing absolution is different than forgiveness. When we say we forgive somebody, that means they don't have done something wrong, and we can see that it's wrong, and we've decided it's wrong, and we're going to say, that's okay, I'm going to forgive you, and we'll go forward from here. But we know, as humans, forgiving, we don't forget. We like to pretend we do, but we don't. And we're kind of always waiting for the next shoe to drop with that person or that kind of a situation. Absolution is different than that. Absolution says, neither you nor I have intentionally created something wrong here. We are having an experience together, and I absolve us both of wrongdoing. Now, in that, what happens, it doesn't mean that the person that you're watching doing something that looks really detrimental is not doing it, but what is taking you out of is judgment whether it's right or wrong. And what it does is it frees you in your heart to stay coherent. And when you are in a state of coherency, then your cortex can actually function, and you can think about what needs to be done next without being in fear. So I always go to compassionate absolution and say, simply absolve whatever you are seeing so that you don't feel that you're like a victim. You don't feel like something bad is going to happen to you. It is an experience that you're having. Now, how do you want to respond? Not react, but respond, from which the word responsibility comes. How would you like to respond to this situation? Knowing that, you're sitting in a state of absolution. And I have a whole ritual that I put on CD and give to people, and I do it in workshops. I've done it over and over for years and years and years and years and years, and it works. Because it takes you out of that place where you feel like you're going to be run over by the next train. if you really come to an understanding that it's an experience you're having with other people who are experiencing as well, no matter what it is they're doing. And that is what I would tell the listeners to look towards. And if anybody wants to go to my website or email me, I have my absolution ritual on a YouTube video. You can sit there and do it with me. And just get used to doing it so that you can slide into that space whenever something comes up, because it totally changes the way you experience life. And you're no longer in a victimhood state, which literally stops you from functioning. And if taken to an extreme, can kill you. Those are people who have heart attacks. Their heart attacks them. They can't live anymore. They can't continue anymore. So what we really want to do is to allow ourselves to understand that we're all in this together, no matter what part we're playing, and then play our part, whatever it is, whatever we're called to do. You do all this wonderful writing and research. I do what I do. The people across the street do what they do. And to just, and to be really in that space of, this is the part I hold. Everyone else is holding a part too. And to play your part to the very best of your ability. Which does
and
not...
go ahead.
Well, it doesn't include feeling like you're a victim. Because then you can't play your part.
Yeah, that so much of that is lacking today, I think. If you think of America as a society and you see how people are oblivious to what's going on, you could say, well, they're playing their part too.
Right, exactly. And we can understand that they're playing their part of being oblivious until we play our part to allow them to see. We can see they're oblivious. That's their part. Now, that calls forth what in us? It calls forth something. Otherwise, we wouldn't even say they were oblivious. We would just say they were a person. But if we can see they're oblivious, if we can see that, that means that's calling up something inside of us that says, I have something to assist if you don't want to be oblivious anymore. Now, maybe they'd say, I want to stay where I am. Okay, then that's fine. Stay where you are. But for right now, I have this to assist. So it's like the Mobius strip, you know, it's that constant back and forth of you see something being doing its part of whatever that part is, it's playing its part, that calls up something in you, that calls up something in them, that calls up something in you, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And that's where our heart really speaks, because our heart is the voice of our soul. And that's where I believe that most of mankind has gotten stuck. And it's in the mind. We've become such a mental society that most people can't hear that voice inside that directs you in your research or tells me to write the book or whatever, because they're so busy thinking about what the next thing is they're supposed to acquire, or being afraid they can't pay their mortgage because everything's going down the tubes. And there's so much going on in the mind that they can't hear. And
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to add, or maybe make a comment on that, what's coming up again. I'm recalling what Jesus said about judgment, and you brought that up very early on. Is there such a state as absolute absolution?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you get my meaning. It's not just a ritual or a process that you know, you say, okay, I'm going to expose this situation to absolution. I'm going to declare that it's absolved, and therefore it's no longer there. It doesn't exist anymore. When in reality, dealing with the forces that we're dealing with now, they keep on going. In other words, we forgive, okay, you forgive the murderer, but that doesn't absolve the murderer from murdering so much that he will not murder again, in other words.
No, it's about you. It's not about the murderer, it's about
yes,
you.
Yes, I understand that. So we have to keep on absolving over and over again. It gets to a point, I think, where people finally say, okay, maybe this is the path that I'm to follow. Why isn't it effective outside of me? I mean, I can be happy within myself, but I think people are looking also to affect or to have some impact on the wrongs that are occurring on the planet. Now, we could get very esoteric and say, well, there is no such thing as right and wrong. So then you have chaos. You have murder going on. You have rape. You have stealing, drugging, oppression, slavery, just every sadistic thing you can think of takes place when you don't have the honor. When one person is not honoring the other, ad infinitum. In other words, we all have to see that. We're not going to have total peace until we all recognize that together.
Right, and it starts with each person.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying that because you absolve something that the person's going to stop doing it. I'm not saying that absolving someone or a situation is going to necessarily make you happier. What it is going to do is to take away the fear and also the burden of carrying this. Like somebody says, well, my father abused me when I was 3 and I'll never get over it. And everything in their life is attached to that moment. So they never really live their life because they're always reliving 3 years old. If they can absolve that situation, doesn't mean it didn't happen. Doesn't mean I don't honor the pain that they had. But are they ready now to absolve it, the situation, so they can go forward without, and the word absolve comes from the word solution, you know, to put back into solution, it's like recycling the energy so that you can go forward with your life. Otherwise, you get stuck.
Yes. Now, I'm asking these questions rhetorically, you understand,
I understand. Yeah. When I was in the Chalice Well in Glastonbury, that's when I got the ritual that I put together. And I was doing a meditation in the Chalice Well over by this little water canal. And what I got during this meditation was the ritual and the phrase, only through absolution will you reach the absolute. And I thought, when I came out of the meditation, I thought, well, that makes perfect sense, because so long as you hold something outside of God and say, I can never absolve this, ever, because it is so horrible, then you're saying that that part of God is something that you cannot be one with.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get to the fullness of the absolute because you're keeping one part outside of it. And
yes.
At the same time, it doesn't mean that that's going to stop happening. And when I say that, I can retract that statement as fast as I say it if I want to by saying that if enough people absolve one situation, it will change.
Yes.
But it's kind of like the 100th monkey.
Yeah. I see that as the moment, let's say, the moment where the absolution takes place, that recreation can take place too.
Yes,
that we shouldn't
absolutely.
We shouldn't just stop there and go back to being couch potatoes again.
No, that's the way you do the absolution, so that you can go forward without fear with whatever it is that you feel is your mission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people ask me over and over and again, because I do these energy transmissions about your soul, and I read with on your soul, and everybody wants to know what their mission is. And when I do it, I keep hearing myself talking about getting quiet and really letting go of the attachments to all of the stuff in life if you want to find out why you came here. Because it's fine to say, I want to know what my mission is. Well, what if your mission is to sell everything that you own and move to Egypt and do something, whatever? Are you going to do that? You know, if people want a mission that's easy to accomplish. Well, don't rock the boat too much while I'm getting my mission, okay? And it's really about being able to let go of attachment to all of these things that we've created around us so that you can do whatever it is that in your heart you really want to do. And I know that there's a ton of people listening right now that go, oh yeah, I don't want to go there, because they know that what they're doing in their life right now, no matter how, what it looks like and how wonderful it may be, isn't what their heart's desire is. Because the heart's desire is your mission. When you really say, what is my heart's desire for my life? That is your mission. Because your heart is speaking for your soul. And it will tell you. But you have to listen. And then you can make a decision if you want to follow it or not. Because you're going to rock some boats.
And so many, yeah, so many look for that answer outside of themselves. They go to
yes.
you as
right.
if you are the expert or...
Yeah,
or,
right.
Or anyone. I'm using you as an example.
No, I completely agree. And it's like, I'll give you the tools to find it. I'm not giving you an answer. I'm not a psychic that's going to go to the astral plane and tell you you're going to marry a guy in a red car with dark hair tomorrow. But I'll give you the tools to find what
mm-hmm.
you already know.
I know that feeling when you're asked that question, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to any of the listeners that do ask, what we're trying to say here is, you know, is it going to come to the point where we have to tell you when it's the right time to use the bathroom?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to make that decision yourself. And you know because of what's going on inside you that that's the right time to use the bathroom.
Right.
And
exactly.
and your mission in life is kind of the same way. Now,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean it's equated with the bathroom. That's not the point I'm making.
Unless you want to be a janitor.
Yes, unless you're the janitor. but just like there are other things going on inside you, we're saying just listen. Stop and listen. You know, look inside. Look within, too. If you have to talk to God about it and ask God to show you, guess what? God will show you. But you still have to be willing to listen. And he's not going to say, oh, you know, I'm busy right now. I can't tell you that, you know, check back with me next week. But if you expect the answer now, then you have to be listening now. Don't dishonor God and make it just a matter of convenience for yourself and for God. God's already given us the ability to see that. So few use it.
And one of the reasons that people don't use it very often is because everybody's so busy and there's so much going on in their mind that they can't hear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I really stress to everybody whenever I'm talking about any of this, you've got to spend some time getting quiet. And you've got to spend enough time doing it that it becomes second nature to you. So that you don't have to say, well, I'll have to go and meditate on that. No, you already know the answer, but you've got to get quiet enough to hear it. And usually that takes practice, just like if somebody wants to become a weightlifter, they have to lift weights and build it up until they can really lift the big ones. Well, you have to spend time every day alone and silent, inside and outside. Start out with 5 minutes, start out with 15 minutes, get up to an hour, get up to 2 hours, get up to the point where you can call upon it driving down the busiest freeway in the United States. You can just call that silence up and it's there. Then you'll always know the answers inside because the answers are there and they're speaking to you, but they can't get through. It's like too many voices on the same telephone line. Nobody can hear anything. And that's the key. And it's not like having to take classes for all kinds of different techniques. It's simply being quiet. That means no TV, no radio, no music, no internet, no telephones, no children, no spouses, for a short period of time every day so that you can hear yourself. And I know that that's frightening to some people. And other people say, well, I don't have time to do that. Oh, okay, then you don't want it bad enough.
Oh, when we go down that road.
Yeah,
my music students will tell me, well, you know, I didn't have time to practice this certain day. I only practice so many days in the week. And I take them through this ritual. We we look at how many hours there are in a week. There are 168 hours, and I give them a good 56 hours for sleeping. And I give them, we go through this, and by the time we're done, there's somewhere between 40 and 50 hours left in the week. Every day. So
to practice, yeah.
To practice. And,
uh-huh.
and they only need seven if I ask mm-hmm. a minimum of an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's amazing when you break it down into little tiny pieces, you can see that there's definitely enough time. I can't or I couldn't means I didn't want to. I didn't choose
yeah.
to.
Right, exactly.
I didn't follow the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with my own method of learning, and
right.
and that resulted in no learning. So
right.
what you're saying is based upon having gone down that path.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, you might get something reading a book. You can be inspired, and it can open up
mm-hmm.
The opportunity to reach that place you're talking about sooner. That's why we read. That's why that's why you're on this radio show. That's why this radio show exists, to communicate with people and to bring people together to the truth and to higher, hopefully higher states of consciousness, so that they learn what that feels like and what that sounds like and what it's about, so that when they confront that themselves, they're not afraid. Oh, yes, this is like what I heard on the radio show.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But everybody right now is, you know, it's like we're on spiritual welfare to me.
That's perfect. Oh, I'm going to steal that one. I love that. That is so good. I'm going to put up a sign. Spiritual welfare is better.
You know, it's like you got to get your spirit stamps here, you know. And there'll be people exchanging them for cigarettes and wine and beer and toilet paper and, you know.
Oh, my God, I'm crying. That's good. That is great. I love it. Oh, it's just perfect. Well, you know, one of my favorite, or I should say my least favorite saying is when you have somebody say something and they say, I don't know. And as soon as somebody says that to me, I just look at them, I go, yes, you do. You're afraid to look. I say the same thing to everybody. There is nothing that we don't know. We always know. I mean, you might not know something that is a fact of, like, history. I'm not talking about history books or things like that, but, I mean, if somebody says something about themselves and you say, well, you know, what do you want to do or how do you want to do it or what do you want to eat or where do you want to go, or and they say, I don't know. It's a dead giveaway. It's kind of like putting a big sign up saying, I'm scared to death to be myself, you know, because everybody, they always know.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime somebody says this to me, they always get this little, I pull them up short right away, whether they like it or not, because it's just such a betrayal of ourselves to not go and look and say, this is how I really feel about this. And it's because
yes.
you want to be accepted, you want people to like you, you don't want to be impolite, laundry list. None of it makes any difference. None of it's real.
Well, we make so many decisions based upon what others might think, because
yes.
everything that we have, the way we've been programmed is to respond to what others think.
Yes.
Even if it's not real, it's all the illusion of propagandized brainwashing. But
I know. Yeah, ever since I put up the Daughter of Jesus website, there's been some people who are really close to me who won't say those words. They just go, how's that other web thing you're doing? How is it? And I go, it's doing really well. It's doing great. Yeah, it's happened twice. I just cracked up. You can't say the words, but I'm not there to affront people either, so I just don't usually put you on the spot unless absolutely necessary. But I just think it's funny because they're really curious, but they don't want to say the words because they don't want to be impolite and they don't want me to know that they're really not too sure about what's going on. And it's just, it's a crack up. People are so afraid to be who they are.
behind that facade, I see the concern of false judgment.
Are you kidding? Oh yes, absolutely. I know. It's just they've already made up their minds, and they're just trying to be nice to me, and that's fine. I mean, I don't care.
Yeah.
But
In a deeper sense, and again, I go back to Jesus saying, "Be careful about judgment," and he said that even those that judge will be lesser than all those doing the evil.
Oh yeah.
But he clarified that and specified that there is an aspect of judgment, and I think he meant it in the sense of observation. When you make an observation and you're describing the way something is, you're not necessarily judging it. But it's the false testimony, the false witnessing, the false judgment of a person because you disagree with the truth or because your belief is in conflict with that observation. And so those people begin judging.
And most judgment, I don't say all, but most judgment carries emotion with it. You can feel it inside yourself. It has an emotive feeling to it. Usually you can hear it in the person's voice. Not always, but usually. But judgment carries a weight with it.
Yes.
And people know.
Well, I hate to be judgmental, but we have run out of time.
It's observing the time. We are observing the clock.
But it's, as usual, it's been fun, and we've been able to touch on some things. I sincerely hope that someone in the listening audience got some questions answered tonight, and I'm sure their consciousness has been expanded a bit with your revelations.
Sure. Oh, well, I certainly hope so, yes.
With that web thingy you're doing.
The web thing, yeah, daughterofjesus.com. You can go and see a picture of me and a splash page. I've got one page up. I'm putting up, my web mistress is going to put up an excerpt from the book, a short excerpt from the book tomorrow. So I'll have that up for the weekend, so that'll be nice for folks to get a little taste.
Okay, and when do you anticipate the book being out?
Probably not till the beginning of next year. I don't think I'll be done.
Okay.
Only because my life's so busy. I've got so much going on, it's like trying to write every day is a real stretch, so I just make myself do it. But I think it's going to take me the rest of the year to get it finished.
Okay, well, in the meantime, people can read The Call, Awakening the Angelic Human, and that's on my website, directlightproductions.com, on the book page, as well as on your website, sacredspaceswa.com. And I encourage people to read the book. I read it. It's an excellent book. It will open your eyes, and it'll soothe your soul, if nothing else, in the meantime.
Thank you.
Tony, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to your next visit. We have you scheduled for next week.
Yes, next Thursday.
Yes, so I'm looking forward to that as well, and I hope the listening audience is too. So you take care in the meantime.
You too. Thank you very much.
We'll be talking soon.
All right.
And
great.
I'm going to say goodnight to the audience. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, our guest tonight. Tony Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich, PhD, will be with us again next Thursday. So be sure to tune in. In the meantime, special thanks to Don Newsom, Seth Hendrick, and Marcella on the sound. Sound was great tonight. Hope it was for you, too. And I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Good night. Thank you.